Ever since China started its loud voice for philosophy on Qin Shi Huang's dynasty around 221 to 210 BCE, it has been a struggle for them to survive. The emperor orders to burn down Confucian texts and to oppress its lecturers. But, you know, a cliche thought of light will always come is an undying hope. So, we will start this synthesis by giving an introduction on how Chinese philosophy became. Then, we will ponder on the question, does Chinese philosophy exist? And lastly, we will see what the possible problem of Chinese philosophy could be. And to conclude it all, we will highlight the survival of Chinese philosophy since it came by synthesizing three specific studies, namely an overview of Chinese philosophy by Lyman Cady. Second one is Chinese philosophy a proper name? This is a response to Rain Rod by Karine DeFert. And the third one would be The Problem with Chinese Philosophy, a study by Ann Chung. So, when Katie began her Chinese philosophy overview, she stated that its main purpose was a means of understanding the massive civilization and culture which was and is China, and which gives, you know, the permanent background for all the bewildering currents and changes of the present. She started it with the topic of ancient dynasties, in which she shows that China's starting philosophy falls into two periods, the dynasty of Qin Shi Huang and the dynasty of Chou, in which these dynasties show that philosophy in that time was used ethically to do better judgment and decisions. And then Taoism came with Lao Tzu as, you know, its mysterious founder. So with his teaching of Tao as the way of nature, in which it is the principle of spontaneous activity, however, Taoism is, you know, a strongly anti-cultural stating, do nothing and all will be done. Which means that man, to attain or approach Tao, should become one with nature, or in other term, approach primitive state of nature. So while Taoism wants to be lazy by nourishing vitality and unity of the soul, Confucianism bursts out of chaos. According to Dr. Hu Xie, a Chinese philosopher, diplomat, and an educator as well, Confucianism is an intellectual organization of life. We should always rectify ourselves with our names. We should organize who we are according to our names or statute in life. Confucianism also has, you know, two sides. The inward side, which he called the code of honor, let's say. And then the outward side, which is an authoritative system of moral education. And they call this as Li, or the rights or direct conduct to be specific. And for Confucianism to be more efficient, it gained cosmic support by introducing the will of heaven. Then Mao Tzu came by introducing universal love and mutual benefit, wherein we should discover what is good for man. Mao Tzu also is a religious philosopher. By introducing his principle of inclusive love, which means that it is a beneficent rule of heaven, which also means that the will of heaven is based on universal love among men. So, we're not going to talk about the whole overview of KD, but rather, we'll settle down with these three schools of thought that bring answers to its time's problems. So, these schools of thought only shows that philosophy in China has been a great deal to its people. And they recognize it as it is. We can see that China's old age philosophy is still timely on today's common problems. So, now that we've come to know the start of philosophy in China, then let's ask, does Chinese philosophy exist? It is quite an intriguing and complicated question because first, the legitimacy of Chinese philosophy in the world is still in question. But the scholar officials entertained a so-called tradition that retrospectively came to be labeled as Chinese philosophy. And the Chinese thought that philosophy lacks constancy, agreement, and transparency because the term philosophy remains tentative and debatable, and its definition remains unfixed. Again, according to Dr. Hu Xie, or rather, Dr. Hu Xie does not consider Chinese philosophy as legit, even though some of his great works are onto it. We can say that Chinese philosophy is less systematic than that of the West, but it still has a system. Maybe we can say that it lacks a formal system like the West, but still, it has a system. Universalists tend to emphasize that quote-unquote Chinese-ness does not exist. It sounds kind of racist, but it's not pertaining to any color or culture, but rather on the self-identity Chinese-ness. So universalists tend to emphasize that, again, Chinese-ness does not exist. And to treat Chinese philosophy as existent, we should treat it as a proper name. And one of the reasons why Chinese philosophy is doubted as a proper name is because it has proper name features. And to treat it as a proper name, it should be like a family name. And it shouldn't just be a family name. It should have characteristics like that of a family name. It should have 6 family characteristics, mainly norms, bonding, strangeness, attachments, failures, and love affairs. So, to fully understand if Chinese philosophy exists is to carry philosophy as a name. But it loses to the word Chinese because it has a sense of nationalism in it. So, the universalist rejects the particularist expression to unbind the situation of finding ourselves to something that, you know, we don't really know, or to something that we're not actively attached. So to answer the question is, yes, Chinese philosophy does exist. And now we know that Chinese philosophy exists, let us now see the problem of it. The first problem that we can observe was that Chinese philosophy stopped thinking after the medieval ages or the antiquity. They have been very silent after that. Another thing is that Chinese philosophy is always in the Oriental philosophy thought, though, you know, it should have. But its identity is only known with the accompaniment of Indian Veda and the Japanese Zen. So, how can one make an identity when it is always entailed with another school of thought that, you know, is much recognized than it? It's just like the thought of Filipino philosophy. How can we make our own philosophy without entailing to Western schools of thought? Will the world recognize us too if we take our own philosophical path? Yeah, something like that. So another thing is that China had a philosophy earlier than the West. And I think that this is actually a weak point of Chinese philosophy instead of an advantage. Because they have been developing their own philosophy even before, you know, Thales questioned what water is, then they abruptly stopped during the Western's infamous beginnings. It really is a downfall for Chinese philosophical thoughts. But in today's philosophical time, Chinese philosophy should uphold its ancient values that experience struggle for existing through different times. We can say that Chinese philosophy should make a loud noise as of today, because Chinese philosophy in its diverse thoughts are timely, though very old. And it can still answer life's toughest questions, you know, that even the Western schools need two or more philosophical bases on answering. And that Chinese philosophy and Chinese philosophers should upheld its own as proper names. Because it is existent, right? Chinese philosophy has been and always will be in the Oriental philosophy among other Eastern schools of thought. The only disadvantage why China can't be certain of its philosophy's legitimacy is because they do not have an agreement about it. Scholars does not discuss about it, and they just think that it exists or not. They will give meaning to it, like what Feng Yulin did to philosophy. They are divided by uncertainty that envelops the skin of Chinese philosophy. We can't just, you know, think that it exists. We should have a definite causation that it exists and an argument to support that it exists. How, you may ask? Of course, by the six family characteristics that Karine Defourt introduces on her response to Rainrod. Namely, implicit norms, parochial pride, lack of control, limits of argumentation, lack of knowledge, and jealousy. Chinese philosophers act knowingly or unknowingly as a family that belongs together. The unity that they can show is what makes Chinese philosophy an existent philosophy. Another thing that we can observe is the systematical and chronological rise of Chinese great thinkers, like the rise of Western great philosophers as well. If that is one of the characteristics to be called as an existent philosophy like the Western schools, then there you go. Chinese philosophy is also existent. It has the characteristics of an existent philosophy, so therefore, it must be existent. Right? So we're applying logic here. So, we know that these modern times needed an adaptivity skill. So everything might survive. And we can see that Chinese philosophy survives through those ancient texts that until now is being translated to different languages around the world. With this, the ancient context of Chinese philosophy has been preserved and passed on through Chinese and non-Chinese individuals that sought knowledge through China's mid-developed way of thinking. So, Chinese philosophy survival has been a great journey to explore since it came to China by Lao Tzu. Until, you know, its sudden stop in the medieval era, until its loud and complicated issue of legitimacy up to now. So, we can finally conclude that Chinese philosophy is a survivor of the time and its skeptical attacks. Because China's long history could not be completed without the thought of Confucianism, which until now is being practiced and learned in China. So if you want to check my references for this, I'll leave it on the description below, okay? And thank you for listening as well. So again, this is Migs. Have a great day and bye-bye for now.